Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, October 14th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
Yes, it is. We have Wendy Wilson joining us here today, as usual, and we're always happy to have her. So let's go ahead and get started. And we had a little bit of a good day for gold today, up 1080, off the high of the day, though, but 1903 in the New York spot price aftermarket. We have silver up 14 cents, $24.37. Platinum is down 5 at 866, and palladium was up 31, 2,394. The USDX today was down 0.17 at 93.35. Crude oil was up 87 cents at 41.07. Paper markets today, oh yeah, the Dow down 165 points, 28,513. The NASDAQ was down 95 at 11,768. The S&P was down 23 at 3,488. 10-year yield is holding at 0.72%. European Asian markets, you know, didn't do anything exciting to overnight. And that's a lot of things in the news, but we'll get to that after this first segment of the program, because we have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs joining us. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Dave.
Hi there.
There he is. I thought we'd talk about the antibody technology that's going on, where they're engineering antibodies for therapeutics. And you may have heard that synthetic antibodies are the kind of the new therapeutics that medicine is dispensing or going to dispense. Now, some of this new technology is still very experimental. President Trump was given a synthetic antibody called Regeneron. It's also referred to in the medical industry as the antibody cocktail. So these are new drugs. They're designed for viral infections and other types of diseases. So we're going to dive into this area and see what's going on with it. I do want to read you a quote from the U.S. National Library of Medicine Institute of Health, April 2009, where they said, a century ago, antibodies were regarded as the magic bullet that would selectively strike disease hotbeds in the human body. So there's some research that has been going on for 100 years, actually. So in 1975, there was this research report talking about scientist Paul Urich, who in 1908 sparked the idea of making immune system antibodies through technology. So Urich received the Nobel Prize for his work along with his colleagues, and the concept went beyond just copying what the human immune system does, you know, using antibodies, to actually reshaping your immune system. So there's a whole other concept here. So the problem science has been facing over the last 100 years regarding man-made antibodies is that the human body really doesn't like them very well. And they have presented, quote, according to medicine, insurmountable disadvantages, end of quote. So, but science has made some adjustments over the last century, and they've had some help from genetic engineering technology. And there are about 30 different antibody therapeutics being developed right now. And they're testing these synthetic antibodies for things like infectious diseases, cardiovascular disease, and also autoimmune diseases. So the investment field in this type of science is pretty huge, by the way. Over $21 billion is expected in return sales. So the interested aspect is... The interesting aspect is that 85% of the synthetic antibody therapeutics are drugs designed to reshape the antibody or the immune system. So these are genetically engineered antibodies that contain cytokines, and cytokines are proteins as an immune system signaling agent. They're natural, it's what your immune system has. So these cytokines influence interferon, interleukin, growth factors in certain cells, along with other effects on human cells altogether. So it's a kind of a domino effect when you think of it. It's not just you know, immune system. Also, these synthetic antibodies also contain antibody conjugates, and these are drugs that target a therapy through certain cells, and they also do contain toxins or bacterias that can bind to cells. A lot of times they'll put a bacteria in there to see if they can kill something else, like a cancer cell, for instance. But this is kind of a delicate process. The cells of your human immune system are important, and science describes synthetic antibodies as a delicate process, as the mechanisms of your antibodies and their functioning and their interaction with other pathogens and even other organisms is so sophisticated. So what medicine has contrived is using bioinformatics to as a model, and the human immune system cells by breaking them down into compounds and then synthesizing them. And then they program these cells, the properties, with the antibody cells that have genetic cell engineering technology in them. So it's kind of convoluted the way it's described, but this way they can actually direct the synthetic antibody to attack certain cells, let's say a cancer cell, or pathogens like a specific disease or virus, and create a new line of therapeutic medicines depending on what they're attacking. Here is a quote from the U.S. National Library of Medicine Institute of Health. They say, thanks to gene engineering, researchers managed to decompose antibodies and compose the new construction. So they're reshaping antibodies this way. So let's get to that Regeneron drug that President Trump mentioned. So this Regeneron, or the cocktail, the antibody cocktail is referred to, is supposedly to be used for patients who have an immune system unable to overcome an infection like COVID-19. Here is what the chief president and scientific officer of Regeneron, Dr. George Yancopoulos, I guess I probably massacred that, but he says Regeneron's antibody cocktail rapidly reduced viral load and associated symptoms in the COVID-19 patients, and the greatest treatment benefit was in patients who had not mounted their own effective immune response, and Regeneron could provide a therapeutic substitute for low immune responses. So this Regeneron is still in human trials. It's not cleared for sale to the public yet. The short and long-term side effects are unknown, but the doctors in the test groups are stating that these synthetic antibodies offer a, quote, well-tolerated safety profile, end of quote. Therefore, there are side effects when they say that. So the phase one human trials that are being researched really didn't mention the specifics on side effects, but they did say there were some serious events with four patients in the clinical trial, but they said there were no deaths. But what the serious events were, they didn't list that. So what the serious side effects are, they didn't report on, but the average age of the human trial test group was 44, but mind you, it was a very small group of 275 people.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, James Crowe, he's a virologist at Vanderbilt University. He says people who did well on the cocktail still had low levels of a virus detectable after treatment, which, in theory, could cause problems, end of quote. What those are, again, a mystery. So they're developing all these antibodies. And if we read further into the Regeneron synthetic antibody infusion drug, you can find that to begin to make these bioengineered antibodies, they have to start somewhere. They need something. And that means, you know, they have to have a source to use in the process, something, some material, to form their genetically humanized antibody. And what they do is they create a genetically humanized mice antibody. So the technology uses genetic sequencing editing of human DNA and mice DNA. And let me read you the quote from a report in Science, September 30th, 2020. They said this, researchers plucked the genes from the antibodies from humans who were infected with COVID-19 and also from mice that were infected with the virus. They then put these mice and human genes into a Chinese hamster ovary cell to bulk up the manufacture of antibodies. Then these antibodies were harvested and used in the drug for infusion purposes, end of quote. Wow, I mean, I don't think my wildest imagination would have thought that one up.
Well, my question is, why would they give the president a untested antibody cocktail?
Yeah. Well, again, it's only for people whose immune system wasn't mounting a defense, supposedly, but then that's a doctor's call, you know? And they would have had to have gotten special permission to use that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got this warp speed thing that the government's working on for some sort of, you know, drug solution. So the manufacture of your Regeneron is really more difficult to make than, let's say, an antibiotic, and it's more expensive. So the U.S. government has invested $450 million in Regeneron to produce 300,000 doses by the end of 2020 through Operation Warp Speed. Now, Eli Lilly Company says it will be able to produce 250,000 doses per month. However, the drug maker is skeptical if it can produce the drug fast enough, according to the CEO, Eli Lilly's chief scientific officer, Daniel Skovronsky. He says, none of us can make enough antibodies to meet this need.
Didn't Eli Lilly just get stopped on their production of...
Yeah.
You know, because of what?
Was it the vaccine?
I don't know.
Illness.
Yeah, the vaccine, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they've had a lot of the manufacturers of the vaccines. There's like many of them making it, Moderna and some others. They've all had events. And several of them were neurological, where somebody was given the second dose phase and they came down with a neurological disorder and they were paralyzed. And then I think it was Eli Lilly that were saying that people came down with MS or something.
Well, I thought it was Johnson & Johnson that had the problems with the test subject, but Eli was shut down because of their production facilities or something. It wasn't sanitary,
right,
or something like that. So both of them were shut down, but for different reasons, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're rushing it. They're definitely hastily made, and and that's the problem with a lot of serums, your vaccines, is they do cause a lot of neurological disorders.
And I go back to Regeneron because if I saw correctly, September 29th, days before President Trump tested positive, they came out and said that they were finishing up their third trial. And you know what? Hey, they got a great boost financially.
Yeah, the stocks, I'm sure. I know President Trump's been on, you know, he's gone out to do more rallies and says, you know, he feels great, whatever they gave me. I don't know what was in it, but I feel great. Oh, yeah. We got to pray for President Trump because we don't know what's going to happen. like I think your engineer was kind of quipping that, you know, maybe he'll have a big, you know, urge for cheese or something. I don't know. but we'll see.
I mean, I hope not, but I mean, I just could never figure out why they would give the President of the United States a questionable therapy.
I mean, especially when, you know, we were told he wasn't that severely affected by the virus.
Yeah.
So was it warranted is the big question now, wasn't it? Well, I don't know. Everything, you know, it's the HIPAA laws and you can't get information, you know.
I don't buy that.
We're probably not informed as to half what went on. So
I don't know if this is true, but I read where he had non-disclosure forms.
I heard that the doctors, you know, and that's, you know, probably why, you know, they had issues with the press, you know. They were only allowed to give them so much information. And really, it was just, a bone, throw them a bone. There wasn't really anything spectacular to write about. But I guess had the reporters had this information about what Regeneron is, they would have got bombarded with the synthetic mice antibody thing. I don't think, personally, I don't Well, you know, I read a report where people, you know, the trust in medicine is waning because people just don't, you know, they just don't trust the science like they used to. So
I guess to some degree that is a good thing. Because you should.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember my grandparents and so forth, but it was a different world back then. I mean, they did what the doctor tells them to do, and
right.
With no question.
And, you know, the elderly that are still around and still able to, you know, take care of themselves and live at home and unassisted, you know, they still have that mindset. You know, they do what their doctor tells them. Yeah. They don't question it. And the thing is, you know, they're going to their doctor, but they're seeing younger and younger doctors as the other doctors retire. So they're getting a different generation of physicians that, you know, haven't taken the, you know, the oath, the Hippocratic Oath, because they've done away with it. So it's too old-fashioned, they're saying. It's not necessary. Oh, I think it's necessary. I do. You know, because a doctor can push a product if he's got a lot of stock in that company. You know?
Absolutely. Unethical. They get kickbacks, too.
Oh, I know. I used to work for neurologists, and this was in the 90s, and I think back then a CT and MRI was about $800. Now it's thousands of dollars. But, yeah, they could. They had a lot of hospitals competing for the doctor to send the patients to them for the study, and so the doctor would get $400.
Yep.
If they would refer that to, you know, Mercy General or the other hospital, and I'm thinking, man, you could make six figures just on referrals.
Just on referrals, yeah. You need a CAT scan there, lady.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're having a presidential sale at the herb store. So anybody that's thinking about, you know, stocking up on their immune support herbs and so forth, pandemic kits or whatnot, 20% off through the 3rd. So it goes through Election Day. And that's at thepowerherbs.com, or they give us a call at 866-229-3663. This is orders of $50 more and some restrictions apply, but good deal to save and get what you need.
All righty. Sounds like a good deal. We need to be safe. We need to take care of our own health. And you've got some great information. I know you've helped so many people. And so, ladies and gentlemen, give her a call at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. I think this is the first time that you finished early, Wendy.
Oh, I know. But, you know, hey, a lot of information, sometimes you have to trim it out, but try to hit the high points so people get the gist of it. Time is money.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you again. We look forward to our visit next week. Thank you, Wendy.
Take care.
And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And we just listened to Wendy Wilson. She's got an incredible amount of information. Give her a call at 866-229-3663. And let's see. What are we going to talk about today, Dave? Are we going to talk a little bit more about stimulus?
Well, it bears repeating that all the dysfunction and politicking going on. I think it's just more evidence. More and more people seem to think something's going to happen. The more they chat, the more they discuss their differences, more likely they think something's going to happen before the election. Well, I'll be surprised, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think you hit it right on the head there about just what's going on in D.C., the distractions, the disruptions, their inability to do anything. And so it is a big thing because, and again, they're not going to do anything as long as the stock market's going up. I'm sorry, they're just not. Or there's some really bad numbers coming out. Then they'll do it. So I don't know how much of this is just theatrics, just to look like there's this impasse and so forth. But, things have been, as far as the markets are concerned, Dave, they've just been kind of moving along quite, without much interruption, a couple hundred points up, a couple hundred points down. And so consumers, hey, they still have their credit cards. They still have their debt. They still have money that they're able to spend, at least through to the election. So I don't know. If you look at the revolving credit as a percentage of debt that households have right now, it's very small. It's lower than it's been, which means they're spending the cash that they've saved. So, they got to take those consumers down to zero. Maybe they're waiting till we're a little closer to Christmas so that the money that they give out, the $1,200 or whatever people might get, might be spent for Christmas, to Black Friday, to keep the retail numbers a little bit higher than normal. So I don't know. There's a lot of different things out there. Unemployment insurance will dry up without a new deal, Dave. So,
yes, it will. I mean, to keep consumers engaged in the economy, particularly those who are unemployed. I don't know what you say to the ones who are now long-term unemployed for more than 6 months. But more and more observers are contending that either more reopenings have to occur and be more successful, or that another rescue package to support the consumer has to happen now. We do know that Pelosi and Mnuchin spoke again this morning, but as it's become over the last several months, didn't strike a deal. Believe negotiators plan to speak again tomorrow, they say. Mnuchin, I mean, God bless him. He said he and Pelosi had a comprehensive discussion on a lot of issues. Well, what have you been talking about before? How would you characterize your talks before that? I mean, even as Mnuchin has called for immediate targeted aid, I mean, what the White House really wants are $1,200 stimulus checks to go in the mail with the president's signature before November 3rd, giving him a last-minute boost. But even Mnuchin concedes at getting something done before the election, meaning passing a bill, and then executing on what bill is passed is going to be difficult. So, again, chances of Congress passing something new before November 3rd, they've only narrowed further, Melody, and I believe McConnell's going to have the Senate vote on a more narrow plan than either the White House or Democrats have proposed as early as tomorrow. So that'll be interesting. I suspect, although I'm not sure, some Dems apparently today were calling on Pelosi to consider their $1.8 trillion proposal.
My question is, if the Democrats, if all these polls were as hot as they were and true, if I was a Democrat, if I was in Pelosi, I'd say, let's get this little one passed before the election. That'll give us an extra step up, probably more so than Trump. And, hey, after the election, then we'll just pass more if they were so, you know, confident that they've got the election bought.
It's as politicized as it normally is. It's all politics now. Yeah. It's all about the November 3rd election and any hint of something helping the other side, be they Dems or Republicans. It ain't gonna happen.
Yeah. Oh, please, November, get here. It's the only time I want the time to speed up.
Hang in there, our unemployed brothers and sisters.
Pardon?
Oh, I just said, hang in there, our unemployed brothers and sisters.
Oh, well, all of us. Anyway, we got a record number of unprofitable companies this year, and 43. Doesn't seem like a lot, but 43 of the 345 companies with a market valuation above $25 billion have posted cumulative losses over the trailing 12 months worth of reported results at the start of 2020. But there were only 14 companies that fit that bill. So it went from 14 companies to 43. The list reflects not only the difficult operating environment that is crushing businesses like Bellwether's Walt Disney. It also shows how stay-at-home trends have helped some companies surge into the stock market's big leagues before turning a consistent profit. Both macroeconomic conditions and the ability of high-momentum names to, you know, justify their valuations are likely to be key themes as this third-quarter earnings season begin. So, and a lot of the number of the unprofitable large companies wasn't entirely due to the pandemic. Eclipses even the amount during the global financial crisis, though there were fewer companies of that size than at the start of 2009. There were 73 companies with market values of at least $25 billion, and four of them had reported losses over the previous months, Dave.
There, it comes down to another billion here and a billion there, Melody. Yes. Disney posting net loss of $1.1 billion. Last year at this time, Disney had reported more than $12 billion in net income. And, of course, shelter-in-place orders have helped their streaming video service, Disney Plus, which has grown to the point that the company is reorganizing to focus more on streaming. That's certainly consistent with what's happening with companies that own movie theaters, which we'll talk about later on in the program. Chevron's another big company, second largest by market cap, and its loss is the biggest at $8.7 billion. So it will be interesting. We see, you know, Peloton, the bicycle, the recumbent bicycle companies. That's up more than 360% this year. That is seen as one that's likely to go down as things get better and people start returning to the gyms, their gyms where they've been staying away from in throes. But you also have DocuSign, with paperwork going online, and Wayfair. I can't tell you how many emails every day I get from Wayfair. I regret my curiosity, Melody. You know, you got to be careful when you're online, because especially if the company uses cookies and, you know, you're not paying attention, all you have to do is open up just to see what they are. And it's like, oh boy, they don't forget you. Let's put it this way. So, anyway.
Oh, I know. They can be annoying too, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so.
I was just going to say, excuse me, let me just finish my thought. I'm sorry. The last point I wanted to make there was, these are issues you have to think about if you own stocks. If you own gold and silver, particularly physical gold and silver, you don't have to worry about, you know, profit and loss statements and this, that, and the other thing with all these companies. You're safe as can be with the haven of all havens. So do yourself a favor. Simplify life. Buy more gold and silver.
It simplifies your financial life, because I think after these elections and so forth, things, I can't imagine it ever being simple again out of D.C. for a while. So get prepared.
Indeed.
Get out of the paper. Eventually, we're going to have another march. Only this time, there's going to be no recovery. And if there is a recovery, your dollar is going to lose so much value, it doesn't matter what you have in paper. Because nobody's going to want it. Nobody's going to want to buy it. So you might have a, you know, $500 stock, but nobody's going to pay it. Nobody will pay that $500. So anyway, one industry, though, that does continue to thrive, and Dave, I can remember back in 1985, maybe 1980. And a family friend, he says, if you want to start investing, you need to get into the medical field now. And of course, we never heed people's advice, especially when you're, you know, 30. I know I'm 39, but you know, when you know, you just don't. You either, you know, you're struggling as it is, working, going to school, and doing this and doing that. You know, it's hard to think about investing and so forth. But you know, the healthcare industry, the third quarter earnings season started, and if the quarter is anything like the previous one, the industry will continue to fare relatively well. We know that the pandemic dominated the spring and summer. It forced people to put off care, but people have resumed getting procedures and seeing their doctors. The second quarter was extremely profitable for health insurers. United Health Group, for example, posted its highest ever profit.
Lovely.
Yeah. Health insurers still aren't paying as many medical claims as before the pandemic, and that'll likely keep their profit figures at high levels. Have you seen any benefits for the amount of profit that they're making? Have you seen your medications, your pharmaceuticals? You know, have you seen your bills go down? No. The persistent number of COVID cases is no longer stunting all demand for pharmaceuticals, surgeries, and medical devices, hospital stays, doctor visits, and other healthcare services, Dave.
Well, yeah, and the highest profit margins in the second quarter belong to pharmaceutical companies. Certainly no surprise there, and hospitals. Almost all hospital systems, in fact, posted a net profit due largely to the rebounding stock market boosting their internal investment portfolios. But patient volumes, as Melody suggested, have also continued to increase since their low point in the spring. Orlando Health, which is an 8-hospital system in Florida, ended June sitting on $2.7 billion and an 8% operating margin. I'm not sure I'd brag about that. And also received $82 million in taxpayer bailout funds to offset the pandemic. And according to a new survey, hospital executives around the country expect a sharp recovery in volumes over the next 12 months. Medical device sales are also recovering faster than expected. That's according to Johnson & Johnson executives who spoke about this on their investor call yesterday. So, hey, more proof that someone's overcharging us, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you know, producer prices increased more than expected in September, due to a surge in the cost of hotel and motel accommodations, leading to the first year-on-year gain since March. This information was released today by the Labor Department. And it also showed a jump in prices for iron and steel scrap. So consumer prices slowed as supply chain disruptions caused by the pandemic eased. The producer price index for final demand rose 0.4% last month after advancing 0.3% in August. In the 12 months through September, the PPI increased 0.4%. after falling 0.2% in August. So, you know, economists, they forecasted that the PPI would gain 0.2% in September and rebound 0.2% on a year-to-year basis. So, hey, you exclude the so-called volatile food and energy and trade service components. Producer prices increased 0.4% in September, and the so-called core PPI had increased by 0.3% for 3 straight months, Dave.
Well, John Williams of ShadowStats.com, who we mention pretty much every month in the context of prices, inflation, and unemployment, he believes that consumer prices, as measured by the CPIU, actually rose 9.1% in September. That comes after increases of 9% in August, 8.6% in July, 7.7% back in May. That's all a far cry from these underreported numbers by our government.
And we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, I told Dave as we were going into break, the one thing I love about this 4 o'clock hour is because over the years, we have broken so many major stories because the news is just released, and we get to break the news to you, and it was just released that Barron Trump, the son of president and the first lady, has been tested positive. And there's not a whole lot of information. Melania Trump said Wednesday that after an initial negative test, 14-year-old Barron Trump tested positive. It was 2 weeks ago when she received the diagnosis that so many across the country and the world had already received. This is the first lady's statement, that she tested positive for COVID-19. I guess there's really not a lot of information but her statement. Luckily, he is a strong teenager. He exhibited no symptoms. So, again, not a lot of information, but that was just released. Heading into the break, we were talking about, we're just going to touch on some of these topics briefly. The Fed chair says the economy needs another year. Fed vice chair Richard Clarida, he said that this morning, another year, maybe more, until we get back to the pre-pandemic levels of activity. He noted that the policy moves by the Fed and Congress, they've helped stimulate activity like buying houses and cars and investing in software and equipment, all measures that help boost growth. He said that the recession has thrown the economy into a very deep hole. It will take some time, perhaps another year, for the level of GDP to fully recover to its previous 2019 peak. And the big question is, will we ever return to that previous 2019 peak without trillions of dollars heading into the stimulus? And that's the only thing that's going to get us there, just like the tax cuts, trillions of dollars. And how many jobs did it really create? How many manufacturing? Created a lot of leisure, created a lot of hospitality jobs, but what did it really create for manufacturing? Good jobs, good wages, good health care. Those jobs barely exist anymore for the highly educated, for the college graduate. It's hard for them to find those jobs. So anyway, just another confirmation, Dave, that, hey, it's going to be a long haul before we're feeling comfortable again, if we ever do.
Yep.
And I think that's about it. Let's go ahead and talk about the Levity is Golden, our weekly segment. What's today's topic, Dave?
Money. As we discussed on Monday's program, a new survey has revealed that about one-fifth of adults have borrowed money from their parents during the pandemic. And a lot more were considering borrowing from friends. That begs the question, there's that saying again, Melody, is it okay to borrow from family and friends these days or ever? With businesses struggling and the furlough scheme coming, hopefully, drawing down, if not coming to an eventual end. I don't think it will. A lot of people's finances are stretched right now, so they're turning, predictably, to their parents, but also to their siblings and to friends for help. This research found some parents have dipped into their savings to help their adult children, while others have had to cut back on spending. Dee Holmes, who's a relationship counselor from the company Relate, warns that asking to borrow money can cause friction with loved ones and can pressure them to put their finances at risk. She says you may feel obliged to lend money you can't afford because of your relationship with the person asking. Parents often feel they should lend money. Children sometimes borrow it, not actually expecting to pay it back. And so resentment can occur if someone lends money for essentials such as rent and food, and then sees the borrower spending money on things they consider to be luxuries. Like maybe instead of paying rent on your apartment, on their apartment, they're paying rent on a beach house. Certainly between generations, there will be different ideas of what's essential, Holmes adds, and in lending money, the lender may feel they have some rights to dictate what the person spends the money on. If the money isn't paid back as agreed, you run the risk of a huge family rift or damaging a friendship, sometimes for good. But Ellie Austin Williams, she's a financial coach and founder of This Girl Talks Money, thinks if done cautiously, borrowing money from loved ones can work. She says in many cases, it offers an interest-free and low-risk way of making ends meet. If communication between everyone involved is clear and open, there's no reason why borrowing from friends or family can't be a good solution for all, particularly when the alternative is expensive consumer debt. Now, to ensure that a loan doesn't impact your relationship, Austin Williams says it's vital to have an honest discussion about your boundaries from the start. Regardless of whether you're the borrower or the lender, she says, make sure you're in agreement about the terms of the loan. First, make sure it's very clear whether it's a loan or a gift. Also, make sure you're on the same page about the amount owed, the length of the loan, and when it'll be repaid. And, of course, whether any interest is to be paid on top of the initial amount borrowed. Melody, did I tell you I'm a little short on cash till next payday? That is this week's Levity is Golden.
Are you family?
Well, I thought
I was. Do you want to know what my interest is? My interest rate?
Oh, never mind.
Well, you know, it's funny. We look at this, you know, when we talk about, or what you just said, you know, make sure it's very clear. It's a loan, not a gift. You're on the same page about how much is owed, the length of the loan, when it's going to be repaid. I mean, these are just so simple, common sense. Instructions on what you would do, but yet when it comes to family and friends, it's often overlooked.
Yeah, we often leave our common sense at the front door.
And so, you know, thanks for bringing that, because we do live in these times, and it's okay to help people out and so forth. And it is encouraged to help friends and family, but make sure that you know what you're doing and you get it back and everything is spelled out very, very clearly.
Make sure those gold and silver coins are locked away safely, ladies and gentlemen. Don't tempt yourself.
No, don't tempt yourself. Let's see, how much time do we have left? I've been seeing more and more about 5G, and there's big arguments on the health, you know, the impact of people's health and so forth, but they truly are, you know, just pushing this quite
heavily. Apple's out today with its 5G Apple, what's it called, i12?
Yeah.
I believe.
I wouldn't get it, but
only $800.
Yeah.
For the
I'm sure there's a line around the building for people waiting to get it. Or do they? Or do those days exist anymore with?
Boy, I don't
COVID
even know.
Social,
I know,
distancing.
Right? Gosh.
But the European Union, they're opening a new front in the fight over China with a supply of 5G telecommunications equipment for their bloc, moving from the security realm to trade. To date, the EU, like the U.S., they've used security grants to grapple with the question of whether Huawei and other Chinese telecom companies should be restricted from deploying the 5G networks across the 27-nation bloc. In a state step last month that was quiet, as a security debate had been loud, the European Commission began an investigation into whether Chinese exporters of core broadband gear, it's a mouthful, for future 5G networks should face EU tariffs. The EU probe of optical fiber cables imported from China stems from the first ever dumping complaint by Europackable, an association that represents European producers. You know what, Dave? It's just amazing that here they're getting all this stuff made from China. I mean, you got to know there's got to be security breaches. And I mean, really?
Well, this isn't gonna make the White House happy. They're still after all our allies to continue boycotting Huawei and those other Chinese tech companies, particularly with respect to 5G, which certainly has been suggested has some inherent security flaws. So, yeah, this is. I suspect this could be this could blow up into something bigger than just between the EU and China.
And you know, and again, you think about the optical fiber cables. Just so the EU market alone is worth about $1.2 billion. But I want to go back to the optical fiber cables. I mean, I think pretty much everybody gets it that a lot of the things that come out of China, the quality seems to be lacking. So what, I mean, 746,000 miles?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's
is there
just
such,
in the EU?
Is there such a thing that is poor optical fiber cables? You wonder why sometimes we have the poor connections that we do. I mean, I get that all these companies all rent space from the same cable and they share lines and everything else, which I really don't get, but I know that's what's done. So is that part of our problem, just our inferior cables?
It could be, although I know I forget what year now, but it's must be going on 2+ decades when fiber optic cable, maybe even more, were first being laid in the U.S. I mean, the tech companies were just cheering loudly for that technology, just saying that it's going to be so much better for the consumer. Of course, I mean, they're also promoting it business to business, but being lauded primarily as good for the grassroots. And of course, you know, with all the corporate incestuousness that sits on our government boards, like the FCC, you know, which oversees issues relating to this, you know, it's hard to know who's working in our best interest and not, but that's sort of off the subject, I know. But these optic fiber cables, because they're so small, they're so narrow, so much more narrower than broadband or the stuff used in dial-up. The old dial-up was just going to take us to a point where we'd never be looking back. And now here we have a 5G technology, which, again, using these supposedly high quality cables. You're right. I mean, if there's a fault underneath the highway or on lines above the surface, that's going to compromise the quality of, I mean, it won't matter if you have, you know, 1G or 5G. If there's a fault in the line, it's not going to sound too good. So you raise a very, I think, important point. Not just not the quality of the technology itself, but it's how it's installed. You know, the how long its life is. I mean, one of the beauties of this technology supposedly was, you know, you have this planned obsolescence and expected turnover and shorter lives of different aspects of technology and other, you know, construction, what have you. And here you have this, which, you know, is holding on to be to have a life as long as they said it would have. So you got to believe at some point, even though they're encapsulated in secure tubes, that at some point there's going to be some breaks.
Well, we have a break until tomorrow. We're out of time. Sorry about that, folks. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Dave, and we'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.